Welcome once again to Nonproductive on Film. Today we're going to talk about that modern classic masterpiece, Thor Ragnarok. Thor Ragnarok, it's the latest in the Marvel Cinematic Universe franchise-a-majig. It's Thor has an interesting place in my heart amongst the Marvel movies. We could get to that in a minute. And I think it's an interesting film worth discussing, at least a little bit. I'm Frank. I'm joined by Al, James, Pope, and P. All of us have watched this film, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, good, because it's going to be very awkward to do a film review podcast without having actually seen the film. But of course, for those of you listening, spoilers ahead. We're going to be talking about it in depth. How do you folks feel about Thor in terms of the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
The Thor films are interesting because, like, we've seen slowly this evolution of the character and the films into a different style. We started out with Kenneth Branagh directing and kind of
Shakespeare's Thor.
Yeah, bringing in and it's Shakespeare's Thor. And then we do Thor the Dark World, which kind of is this middle-of-the-road kind of movie. And you get a lot more of, in his outward appearances, Joss Whedon's humor.
Oh, yeah. When he's in the Avengers movies, he's a little bit more humorous. Yeah.
But I can't say, like, I had a strong feeling for the Thor movies prior.
I think of the multi-movie Marvel build-up movies, I don't know how to refer to these things. You've got Iron Man, you've got Thor, you've got Hulk, kind of. And you've got the one-offs like Ant-Man and what have you. Who else you got? Captain America, of course.
Guardians.
And the Guardians. Yeah, I think that's fair. I feel like Thor is the only one who has had multiple movies that I haven't been like all in on all of them. I feel like there's a lot of difference. Like there's a
really?
Lot of distinction.
In on Iron Man?
I felt like it was consistent throughout. Like I knew what I was watching with Iron Man. Captain America, I think, did the best of all those to have a cohesive story. Iron Man is character-wise cohesive. There are some movies I like less than others. Thor just feels like it had a little bit weirder twist in it. It felt less consistent than their other movies. It's the best I could come up with.
I can definitely agree with that because I felt like the first one was better than any movie about Thor ever I thought was going to be or maybe even deserved to be. And then the second one was just like could have been a great movie, but was, in my opinion, one of the most wasted and squandered potentials of a film I've ever seen.
Really? Oh, you've discussed this.
I've discussed this at length before.
Past podcasts.
Yeah.
Very weird about that. But I understand it. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is...
I feel like for the Thor films, it's just very easy to point at them and be like, this is what wasn't working here. You know what I mean? Like, there was just a lot of stuff in there that wasn't working, which I think is different from this film.
Yeah, I definitely think this movie is the first... Marvel internal reboot, right? I think this is the first time, because we haven't seen an Incredible Hulk movie, which would by definition be a reboot of the original Incredible Hulk movie. Like we haven't seen a Mark Ruffalo backed Incredible Hulk movie that would have to be somewhat of a... This one is. It's like they took the basic characters that they had and decided, all right, we have loose definitions of what we're looking at, and let's just reimagine all the characters. And I think there are places where it really, really helps Thor.
I would agree. This movie feels like, to me, on a level that it cohesively works in a way that I couldn't say either of the other two films did.
Certainly, I'd say going into it, this is like one of the first times I've seen a comic book movie that really was just able to flip a switch like a comic book and, you know, pull you in with a hyper-dramatic scene. And you're like, oh, I feel an emotion here. And then kind of completely flip you on your head and go, oh, hey, there's Matt Damon.
Yeah. Best cameo ever.
I have to agree with Pope on that one. In that it's the way it relates to comic books, because I don't see this as rebooting Thor. Really, this is a clear example of what I've always said I wanted to see in these movies, which is new creators taking on the role and adding their own spin to it. You know, it doesn't try to say that, oh, let's ignore everything from the past, but it's, you know what? Okay, that happened, but we're going to tell our own story. And we're not even going to worry about the stuff that didn't.
So before we go too far into this wonder, like this praise fest, I'm not sure it does work all the time. And I want to bring up a couple of points where I do think I have issue with what they were doing in the movie. Just to kind of wrap up that thought about the comics, when you look at Thor as a comic, Thor is not a comic book I read a lot as a kid.
Right.
And it's one that is significantly different depending on which creator you're reading.
Correct. Right?
So you've got the dramatic high fantasy Thor lines. There are arcs that are very high fantasy, and then there are the cosmic lines, ones where he's definitely taking his place in the cosmic universe, fighting other gods and aliens and things like that.
Beta Ray Bill stuff.
And then there's stuff that are very funny. There's are very lighthearted. Oh, I almost want to call it like Ren Faire Thor, where you see this especially after the success of the Thor movie and the success of the Loki character. As Loki, actually, this comes. It started off a little bit before the Thor movies, as Loki gets reimagined in some recent Thor books. But as he becomes more of a like an interesting character, more of a fun
Hand-wringing, cackling villain.
Yeah, when he's a little bit more... when you can have more empathy with the character of Loki in the comics, they did some interesting things with him as he grew, literally, into an adult in some cases. That feeling, that kind of joyous, I like Loki, I want to be on his team, that same thing carries over into Thor Ragnarok, into a lot of it, not just for Loki the character, who has always been kind of like a favorite in the movies, but also for like Thor or Odin or any of the characters. You kind of just want to be like, you want to hang out with these people. You want to talk to them.
Mm.
Hulk, Banner in this movie, is a person you can kind of like chill with. You could talk to this person. You know, you want to see this person and be, you've had that friend who needs to be kind of dealt with when they're in a 2-year period of drunken anger. I think there are places where this thing feels very much like the comics, where you could change tone and it still works. Overall, I think that works really well with the movie. I'm not sold on if the humor twists were always appropriate. And specifically, I'm not sold that when it was super dramatic and became silly, kind of gaggy, that it was worth it.
That was going to say, that would be my only takeaway from this movie, is the middle, the humor part works so well that the front drama end and back end, to me, don't. They lack a gravity, because we at no point were ever to infuse it, you know, with a lot of, I don't want to say seriousness always equals gravitas and stakes, but I just feel like this movie didn't do a great job of giving us any stakes whatsoever. And, you know, with all the things that were involved, despite the fact that it should, on a mechanical level, it was stakey, but I don't think on emotional
I'm
level.
Curious to hear what Pope wants to say here, because I'm kind of on your side with this, James, but I think I could maybe focus it up a little bit on something.
I'm going to control myself here, and not ask if you're on anything. But, I mean, because literally their world was destroyed, so I don't know how you're saying that there's no stakes. But more, I'm going to revisit that, like, we can literally say that the director himself is kind of, like, messing up the movie, because his character in the movie, blue guy.
Korg.
He played Korg in the movie, which he was hilarious, but he literally just took the wind out of a lot of dramatic scenes. That's kind of where he came from a lot of the time, where you're like, oh yeah, duh, this can be a haven.
And he comes in and he takes the wind out of the scene.
I have to, like, I'm with Pope on this. I feel like there's that one scene in the entire movie that I felt like, man, that joke didn't land. And that was kind of inappropriate. But beyond that, I never felt like there were never any stakes. I feel like the stakes were always there.
What was
there.
That joke, just out of curiosity?
Huh?
What was that joke?
Oh, the joke he said, where, like, Korg was like, oh, and it will be a haven for everybody. The foundations, oh, never mind, the foundations are gone. We're like, it's destroyed.
Okay.
I feel like that was the only joke that ever went too far. But, like, overall, there were stakes. I felt concerned for the populace. I felt Thor's consistent need to get back.
I think my problem is when you, just because you say there are stakes, oh, their entire world is in danger, doesn't mean that they have emotional weight. Like, the mechanics of the mistake, the stakes are there, right? But I never felt any emotional weight. I don't know Asgard. Yeah. Three movies, I don't know Asgard.
I agree. At no point in the movie did Thor or Loki act like their father had just died?
Yes. Yeah, it was very, very barely in that.
We never get a chance to mourn the Warriors 3, who were murdered literally.
Literally
on screen in front of us.
Killed on screen, and it was a Transformers the movie moment. Yeah. Where you're like, did that just happen? Oh, it just... And at the end of the movie, I was like, maybe there's some sort of Ragnarok the gods come back at the end. Oh, no, they're just dead. Those characters have never paid off. I think what we're talking about in stakes are, yes, worlds can blow up. But if you don't have the emotional stake in that world, it doesn't matter.
No.
And for specifically, what I'm saying is, all right, early on, there's a scene where Hela comes out and she kills all the soldiers in Asgard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those are a lot of people who died, except I don't know any of their names. I don't know any of the consequences of them dying. And specifically, it's sandwiched between two comedic scenes. So I'm like, is this supposed to be a joke? I feel like towards the end of the movie, the stakes are more solid for me. After the frustration of being prisoners and trying to do anything to fight, and they've established that this is like the end, they're not going to make it out of this. I kind of felt some stakes in that. Are they going to save the people on that bridge? You know, are they going to be able to stop this monster from spreading out too far? It was kind of there, but throughout most of the movie, especially the top half, I kept thinking, like, I really wish they had not done Hela or done it as a separate movie. It feels like that part was the original draft of Thor Ragnarok, or that Thor Ragnarok was something they had to do to get to Infinity War, which I'm still not quite understanding why that was necessary. But the funny movie that we got could have just been done with, like, oh, Thor's on a routine mission and lost in space. I would have been good. Done.
Yeah.
I wouldn't need anything
else. I'm
on
board with that movie completely.
Yes.
Wow. I'm so the opposite opinion in every sense of that word. I never felt like those stakes were not emotional. I was invested from minute one. I never felt like they were mechanical, like they weren't genuine. I felt for more than people on a bridge. Like, I'm just so far away on this. Not to invalidate your opinions, but like,
I'm so different.
Your opinions are invalid.
I'll say one thing, hopefully, to underline all of this. There was a joke, there was a gag line in there. Not even a gag line, it was just a reference that Jane Foster and Thor broke up.
Yeah.
But it was a mutual thing.
Yeah.
Now, you've had two movies loaded with how significant that relationship is. There have been some complaints and some issues with how Jane Foster needs to be put in a safe place whenever there's an Avengers movie and they can't get Natalie Portman to be in the movie for some reason or whatever. Like, this is significant to people who are allegedly Thor fans, right? This is a relationship that the romantic end of that relationship was very significant in Thor the Dark World. And it was just sort of dismissed as maybe inconvenient in this movie because you kind of want to build a little bit of attention with Valkyrie. That may have been the only reason. They want to build tension with Valkyrie, and Jane wasn't going to be able to be put into the story, so done. And that feels like the evaporation of stakes from what we've built up in the franchise.
I guess it's the one thing I probably wouldn't have pegged, because I'd give them a little bit of a pass on it, just because they have no... Natalie Portman's not coming back. She's done with Marvel. She's done with the series. There's no negotiation that can happen that will get her back. So it's the only thing I would have actually given them a pass on, to being like hand wavy them that away.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about like beyond. For all we know, there was a production thing where they originally had Kenneth Branagh coming up with an amazing dramatic story, and they're like, oh no, we ran out of pathos. We got a New Zealand guy in to finish this movie up, and now it's funny. Oh no, how are we gonna do? Like, I'm not talking about production reasons. I'm just saying in the film. Like, for me, I'm watching this, and I'm like, oh, I get it. I mean, I get why you need to do this out of universe. It's a much more interesting film to have Thor awkwardly flirting with Valkyrie and not having to deal with where Jane is. But you totally just sort of like, it was a high school line. If you didn't even bring it up, it may have even been better. But they're choosing jokes instead of drama in many places.
Once again, I am falling on the exact opposite camp. I loved that line. I was like, yes, get rid of it. It's done. All it deserves is a line, and it's over. Yeah. Like, it was the bane of my existence in Thor 2.
But you're
2,
not
and
in the opposite camp of me. You can't just interrupt, say, I think the opposite, and then be done with it. my point is that they've chosen not to introduce drama, but they still have some dramatic moments in there, and that many times it's very awkward. Your point is that I didn't really care about it. I didn't care about it. That's a different animal. That's a different species of thing. So for you, would you have enjoyed it more had all the drama been removed entirely and it just been jokes?
No, because
like, you were sold on the drama.
Yeah.
For me, I wasn't sold on the drama, so I would have enjoyed it more if it was just like, you know what? Going to battle world, and then you show up and he starts punching. Like, that would have been more fun for me.
I feel like you're kind of sidestepping the fact that, though, this is kind of what reestablishes the brother relationship, and Loki teasing Thor is a very key mechanic of their relationship, and that's like kind of just reestablishing them as being okay.
Actually, I agree with you. No, that is a place where the joking and the humor and the drama carry. For me, like, I'm like, yeah, that's sibling teasing each other, and immortal siblings teasing each other could be very fatal, I guess. But like, I get it. And that is one of those few times it actually carried weight for me.
It's clear that Chris and Tom have the best chemistry out of all the characters in all the Thor movies at all the times.
Right.
But I mean, even with Loki, like, it's almost as if, you know, I like to to jump back to what Frank said a little while ago. Was almost as if they decided that they were doing Ragnarok. They did. They literally decided they were doing Ragnarok, and then Wati came on board. So, you know, like, they had to do this plot line, and then they made an entirely different movie out of it. They even are self-referential about that. The whole line where Banner asked Loki, weren't the last time I saw you, you were trying to, you know, like, kill all of us, everybody.
Right, right.
And he's like, what are you doing now? Oh, it varies from moment to moment. You know, they're even referencing that they have no idea what they're doing with this character right now.
You know, like, see, I don't agree with that one.
That's 100% what that's in there for.
I think that character is definitely always varying moment to moment.
Yeah.
I think because it's Loki.
Yeah. He's an opportunist at heart.
Yeah. I feel like that's a little bit of a given. So anyways, we have mixed feelings about this, but overall, I think it was a pretty good experience, and mostly because of the humor and the fun. I think that was my biggest, the strongest takeaway with it. But let's talk about a bunch of things that we really enjoyed or things that we really hated about the movie. Let's go around table. I think that might be a fun way of doing it. One thing I hated, I'm going to actually go right to the negatives. Hela and her headpiece, it was cool. I hated how often it was removed and then came back on. I was like, why? For some reason, I super paid attention. I guess it's one of those things where, like, if you've got... This happens a lot in masked superhero movies where, like, we got a big name actor. We got to show that face. And then afterwards, we're like, but it looks like this. So it took me out of it every time it happened. It really bothered me. One thing I absolutely loved was just very simply, I liked the, oh God, you know what? Goldblum. Jeff Goldblum.
God,
every
so
character
good.
Has their moment where it's wonderful, but I think overall it's the improv moments, and Jeff Goldblum's improv movements, which I have to guess are improv movements. I know that there was a lot of improvisation on the set, but I don't know which ones were which were scripted. They were just sort of like, he was having fun as a villain who wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
They handed him the kill stick and he was like, what? That's not a death offense. It was just rude. And I was like, thank you. Thank you for not being over dramatic, villain who has slaves, although he doesn't like that word. It's so good. So good.
With jobs.
Prisoners with jobs.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
All right. Anybody else who wants to go next?
I'm going
to
say I really liked the action scenes in this film.
Oh, yeah.
They were fantastic, especially when we get Thor's, like, eventually having his power, like, or realizing his power.
Right.
And it's such a great scene, too, I think, where he's sitting there with Anthony Hopkins, and Anthony Hopkins has one of the best lines ever. It's like, I lost my hammer, and like, are you Thor, God of Hammers?
Yes.
Like it's great. Like, cause it's
one,
like,
of the best lines ever. Use it in any movie. It makes perfect sense. Frankly, my dear, are you the god of them?
No, but it's just good. And I like the way they were able to use that. Just every action scene he's in, from when he's fighting in, like,
the arena,
fighting Surtur, yeah, and all that other stuff, and just all the fight of the bridge. Great stuff.
All right. Anything you don't like about this gem of a movie, Al?
Things I don't like about the movie. Man.
The fact that it was over.
There is just one too many jokes. I think it works fine except for that, and maybe I would like...
That makes sense that that joke is your least favorite joke, because you were, like, totally buying in all the drama. I picture Al with tears in his eyes as Asgard's falling. He's like, I never thought I would see this day. And then there was a joke, and you're like, I'm devastated.
He's like, out of my experience. Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's true.
Who else?
I'm going to go for one thing I loved, which was the Hulk.
Of course.
It was absolutely so good. And everything about it, right? So it was great that Mark Ruffalo got to do the motion capture for it. The Hulk is looking better and better every time. It looks more and more like Mark. He's capturing his facial expressions and things. And plus, I've been waiting to have the Hulk talking in a movie. You know what I mean? When I read Hulk comics, there are plenty of comics where the Hulk is definitely not quite as, you know?
It's stoic, yeah.
Yeah. So that was nice. The one thing I didn't like is I really wanted to like the scene where Hela's beating up all of the army people. But it was just a little too visible for me when she made the switch from Cate Blanchett to 100% CGI character, which is just juxtaposed with how great Mark Ruffalo looks.
She apparently did a lot of workout with a capoeira instructor.
It's literally the only scene where she's not like part of like body doubling or whatever, because she's just flipping around and doing all this stuff. It's just her, and she just doesn't move quite right. It's very subtle, but it just took me out.
It's kind of funny you mentioned that, because like literally I had an epiphany moment during this movie where I'm like, oh, I can really see the CG. It's a comic book movie, and like literally like all of the stress of that just released, and I was like, well, I guess that's gone for the future. Yeah.
But I've let that go.
Yeah, it's like, but moving on, I'd say like what really hit me hard about the movie was that there's just too much like beating of permanence. You know, like you have the death of Odin, and you have like death of Asgard, and you have the loss of Thor's eye, and that like it just really bothers me that there's just like almost too much change about the world coming up just because of this movie, where it's just like so much is just radically changed, and then boom, they deliver him to Thanos at the end of the movie. Where too harsh, I feel like, just too like it forces a hand. There's not really much up in the air anymore.
Yeah, we didn't need
anymore.
The Thanos thing.
No,
we didn't.
You want to step in real fast?
I was just saying, speaking of the Thanos thing, one thing I really did love though is when Hela is going through the treasure room and she pushes over the Infinity Gauntlet's fake, and I'm like, oh, solve that problem.
Yeah, I was really happy that we went in with that continuity and we're like, oh, well, this is not the real thing. That's why it's here.
Yeah. There was just a lot of fun about this movie. There's a lot of good chemistry, you know, like even like Mark Ruffalo interacting with Loki, like where you're like, oh, this is hysterical, or like, oh, this is awesome. Like, I love the way everybody interacted with each other. It didn't feel like anything was forced, unless it was meant to be forced, like, you know, the relationships with Hela and Thor and Loki, where it was a lot of fun to watch each of the characters interact with each other.
Me, I liked the overall style, I think. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's like, I prefer more of the Kenneth Branagh style Thor story.
Yeah.
I want to see that kind of drama when I go see a Thor movie. This Thor, I think, was very important. I think it was very important to do this kind of Thor movie. Right now is a very good time for it. It's important to represent this over-the-top, I like to call it the Van Side painting version of Thor. You know, because this Thor looked like the kind of thing that was airbrushed onto the side of a van in the late 70s, early 80s.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so much of that's a big part. That was a big era for Thor in the comic books. And I think it's very important that it was represented on film at some point. And I think it was done incredibly well. Maybe they'll revisit this kind of movie again. Maybe they won't. But I'm glad it got represented. If I had to pick something I didn't like about it, it would be Korg. Because I feel like Taika Waititi, I think, put himself there as like a vanity thing. You know, he wanted to be in his movie. And he took a character that was in the story and basically said, Korg, to me, deserved much better. As a reader of the comics,
if I had to pick anybody who would be upset about this, it would be Pete about Korg. It's always like, hey, you guys, this character nobody knows, or nobody on this table knows. He was important in the comics.
He was.
Yeah.
He was a, and I'll give him credit. He's got huge ties to Thor.
Yep.
Because before he appeared in the Planet Hulk comics, he actually was a villain in Thor. I don't think he was even named necessarily, or it was a throwaway name.
It was retconned that he was one of those original rock beings that attacked Thor early on in like Journey into Mystery.
Yeah, it was one of the early Journey into Mystery things. Thor fought these three people from Korg's race.
Right.
And it wasn't even retconned. It was just, you know, they, when doing Planet Hulk,
they were going through we'll
have this rock guy here, and hey, why not? We've used these rock guys before. He's one of the three that Thor fought. I thought that was really interesting, and in the Planet Hulk, he became a very noble character. He was a huge import to that story, and he was dusted off as a joke in this, essentially. So I really just didn't like the way that character was represented.
Mm.
But like I said, the movie is its own thing. He, for the most part, worked in the movie. So it's just, if I had to pick something I didn't like, it's that.
All right. So yeah, I think there was a lot to like about this movie. We didn't even get to you're talking about battle sequences, the Valkyrie fight, which had a whole different camera structure.
Yeah.
A brand new thing to use with a strobe light and so many interesting things going on with this. The fact that those, I'm not sure if they're Kirby-esque, but Kirby-esque guards. Did you remember those? The Kirby guards?
On Sakaar, right?
Yes.
In the Grandmaster's thing. Those were Celestials. I don't know if they were supposed to be Celestials.
They looked a lot like it, yeah.
Those armor designs were used in the comic books as Celestials.
The fact that so much attention to detail was put into these things, it was really great. And as far as the end narrative I don't know if there was a better way of doing Ragnarok. We're getting rid of the gods, which is supposed to be like this ultimate story, which would never get the attention it needs in the world of Avengers and Infinity War and all that. Mm. To make it so that, like, no, we have to destroy ourselves to kind of free ourselves. Like, this is what was supposed to happen, the end of the world. I think it was perfect tie-in with the mythology and with the resetting the clock, making Asgardians a nomadic race, bringing them to Earth. I think it actually opens up a lot more doorways for Marvel than it closes, believe it or not, even though you're destroying an entire world. I think it was really, really interesting that you got away with doing something like that. And that is impressive. I would not have expected destroying a world, opening up more doorways for storytelling. Really, really cool. So I think we are going to give our ratings of it. I definitely think I recommend this as a watch it. I watched it in standard. I did not miss anything. Anybody else watch it any other way?
I watched it in standard.
I saw it 3D. Yeah. Honestly, it didn't add that much for me. Mm-hmm. There was no point at which I was like, oh, yes, I am so glad this is in 3D.
Not even when the severed head comes in through the portal at the very beginning.
I think I was asleep for that.
Oh, that's unfortunate. That was the first few minutes. Oh, and of course, Stephen Strange. You know, you get to see him in 3D. Oh,
that was such a good scene. I really enjoyed it. I loved it.
It was a lot of fun. Definitely, I think we recommend going to see it. It's a good film, and I think it's an interesting middle ground where Ant-Man, I think, is a masterpiece of like a comedy superhero film. I think this is an interesting middle ground between spectacle and fun. And my opinion, it's in a way rebooting your characters. It's a way of Marvel being able to reboot things. So I think like actually the masterpiece would be Guardians. Guardians is spectacle and fun. Like James Gunn has got it. But this thing was really good because it was characters that had already existed. We know them as Shakespeare in the Park characters, and we got to see them be a little bit more fun.
Yeah, and thank God it wasn't just Guardians repeated, but with different heroes. It definitely had its own feel to it.
Yeah.
And you got to appreciate the tongue-in-cheek making fun of themselves as Shakespearean characters in front of
absolutely.
Odin. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know who was playing Thor in that, right? In that little play, it was Hemsworth's brother.
Yeah.
Oh, was it?
It's Liam Hemsworth plays him, and then Sam Neill plays Odin.
Oh, Sam Neill. Do you see? Like, there's still things I'm like.
Also,
oh, crap.
I read what's his name? Kevin Feige was like, oh yeah. So we were sitting in a room one day with Taika and you know everybody, and they were like, so who do we get to play Loki? And then, you know, Chris Hemsworth turns around, like, oh, I'll ask my friend Matt. And they're like, oh, who's your friend Matt? He's like, Matt Damon. And he's like, ha, ha, and he's like, no, I got him on the phone. He said, okay.
He'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
If only they could have gotten Ben Affleck to be Thor.
Yeah, then it would have been perfect.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.